From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal, and Saeed Erekat, Washington Bureau Chief at Al-Quds Daily Newspaper. Our moderator is CBS radio contributor Michael Williams.
Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. U.S. House of Representatives Democrats launched a wide-ranging probe into U.S. President Donald Trump this week, with multiple committees calling for more documents and witnesses in the wake of testimony of Trump confidant Michael Cohen. The U.S. Senate is preparing to rebuff President Trump on his declaration of a national emergency at the U.S. southern border, setting up a possible veto and extended action in the courts to decide the matter. The United States posted its largest trade deficit in history, and the federal budget deficit jumped 77%, unwelcome numbers for President Trump, who won election on his promise to shrink both numbers. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to be indicted on a number of corruption charges, this while facing a tough election that is only a few weeks away. Gentlemen, a lot to talk about. Let's start off with the House Democrats launching these additional investigations into the Trump, not only campaign, but the organization. The White House Judiciary Committee sent 81 document requests seeking information on potential obstruction of justice, abuse of power, and corruption in the Trump administration. Three more committees demanded documents and witnesses related to private communications with Vladimir Putin. Intelligence Committee has launched its own investigation. Tom, I'm going to start with you. You've seen lots of presidents, lots of investigations. Have you ever seen anything as wide-ranging as what the House Democrats have initiated with Donald Trump?
No, nothing at all like this, Michael. President Trump, let's face it, is such a fertile target on things like this. He has taken a different view than many of his predecessors on the whole question of emoluments, of entitlements, of conflicts of interest. He's not released his tax returns, as most presidents always do in the modern era. He has basically said all of this is off limits, or it should be, to a president. And he was able to make that stick in his first 2 years because the Congress was controlled by his party, the Republicans. But now that the Democrats control the House of Representatives, the Democrats' attitude is, there's a lot of things that have built up. We're going to look at things that we, the Democrats, consider to be corrupt, illegal, immoral, obstruction of justice, nepotism, cronyism, whatever you have it. So this was the inevitable result of the Democrats taking over the House of Representatives, and nobody should be shocked.
Saeed, I'm going to go to you. Are the Democrats working to lay the groundwork for impeachment with this? Is that ultimately what they're after? And should they be launching so many investigations when we still have the Mueller investigation, the results of that yet to be announced?
I think all in all, the last week has been not a very good week for the President of the United States, Donald Trump. Are they laying the ground for impeachment? I think so. Whether it gets off the ground, that remains to be seen. The Democrats, they are going to push this issue as far as they can. There is no stomach in the country for an impeachment process.
And that's really the thing, as far as they can. That's a subjective thing. So how far can they push it effectively?
Well, they're going to push it. I mean, you know, look, the Democrats did not, or should not actually, forget what happened in 1999, 1998 with Bill Clinton. So the Republicans began somewhere, then ended up in a different place. But they did, you know, they did manage to submit articles of impeachment and, in fact, impeach Clinton. So they will probably try to do the same thing. They definitely have the numbers on their side, but they want also to try to get into something else. I think that in the lead up to the release of the Mueller report, they probably know that the Mueller report does not have the big, you know, surprise on the Russia thing as they would have wished. It also opened the other areas, the discovery areas and so on. You know, Jerry Nadler, the head of the Judiciary Committee, submitted
81
documents. It's a huge number. And it goes through Mr. Trump's life, you know, pre-election and after the election.
It does cover quite a bit of ground. That is something
that we will probably have with us at least until the end of the first term of Mr. Trump.
Tom, oversight or overreach? By the Democrats?
Well, it remains to be seen. Let's see what what they come up with. The other thing that the Democrats are remembering what the Republicans did 18 months or so ago when they investigated Hillary Clinton's emails, her alleged complicity in the death of American intelligence officers and diplomats in Benghazi, Libya. So I think it's, to a certain extent, it's payback time. But I think the breadth of it might be overreach. But on the other hand, the Constitution of the United States says Congress is an independent branch of the government that is involved in many things, including spending money, appropriating money, and conducting oversight and investigation. So I think what's going to happen is the White House is going to slow walk these requests, and they will force the Democrats to issue subpoenas, which is not probably very smart, but then it will have to be adjudicated in the courts. So they're going to try to drag this out as long as they can.
I'll give you the last word on this one, Syed. A president who's almost impossible to make into a sympathetic figure. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that Democrats could make him a sympathetic figure if they overplay their hand here?
No, among his base, yes, but not really among the public at large. I mean, that's, as you said, this president thrives on controversy, thrives on alienating people. You know, he has done that among large segments of the society. You know, they are going to really solidify his base. I think his base will stick with him. His base will be stronger.
Solidify,
you know,
almost calcify.
Calcify. I think that's a much better word. They will calcify this support, and it's a vocal. It's a vocal base. It's a very strong and vocal base. So we will see that the country, the divide in the country, probably the gulf is wider than ever.
Well, the probes, again, are just beginning now. We're just beginning to get the requests for documents. And I'm sure we have many, 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 many hours of testimony and document review to go. So I'm sure we'll be talking about it over these airwaves in the future. Let's move on to the president's emergency declaration. Mm-hmm. And four Republican senators have now announced publicly that their intention to sign a resolution that would block the national emergency declaration of President Trump regarding the southern border. Tom, again, I'll start with you. One of the few times in this administration we've seen the Republicans go against the White House. Why now?
Several reasons, Michael. But one is you've got a third of the Senate up for re-election in 2020, and the majority of those, about 20 out of 30, are Republicans. And this in 2020 is not going to be a good year to be running as a Republican for re-election in the Senate. Now, some of their re-election senators are just fine, but others are going to have a real problem, and President Trump will be unpopular in places that are not bastions of his base, like Maine.
Senator Susan Collins from Maine, who is one of the senators who has announced that she will vote against the president.
Right, and then the other thing is this is a fundamental philosophical issue. Republicans have always complained about presidential overreach. Even many Republicans thought that President George W. Bush was governing too much by executive order. They were very angry when President Obama, who didn't have the votes to get a lot of things done, issued executive order after executive order. And a lot of Republicans are saying we can't be hypocrites, and now that President Trump is doing it. So it's a combination of political expedience. It's a combination of profiles and cowardice by Republicans who are terrified that Trump will turn on them. It's all of that. And the real focus now is trying to convince other Republicans who feel like the four who have already abandoned ship to not follow suit. I mean, I don't believe there are enough votes in the U.S. Senate or the U.S. House to overturn a presidential override a veto. But Republicans don't want a situation where they say 16 Republicans broke with the president to overturn his veto, even if Trump won. That's a Pyrrhic victory. So the real object of Republican lobbying at the moment is trying to threaten, basically, behind the scenes, other Republicans who believe what President Trump has done on the border situation is unconstitutional. Not only is it run contrary to Republican dogma, but they're just afraid to cross him because he is shown to be punitive, shall we say.
In those red states, certainly, where he remains popular state.
Yes, I mean, I agree with what Tom said. I think we are likely to see more than just four, but that's the number that we need. That's the magic number to have, to pass
a resolution. To pass a resolution,
right.
Yes.
So, yes, like Tom said, Trump is going to veto it because he promised he will, and he's a person who sees his promises as the most important thing in his to his presidency and to his legacy and so on. So I believe him. I take him at his word. He's going to veto it. Okay. You know, they're not going to have the numbers to override it. But look, I mean, it's... There is no crisis. I mean, most experts tell you this is not a state of emergency. And people tend to forget. The first time a state of emergency was used, I think it was during the Wilson administration. And then in 1976, a resolution was introduced to limit that, actually. Not, you know, he's saying what he said the other day was wrong. He says, you know, we have given this power and so on in 1976 and all this. In fact, it's the opposite. They tried to limit this power. And the Republicans, who have always... stood for less government, less interference, less executive power, and so on. They also have to look at, you know, the potential of a Democratic president using the same thing for a number of reasons, for political expediency or for political purposes and so on. So they are in a really difficult place. And yes, they are running in 2020, but also this is going to leave, you know, the door wide open for abuse of, presidential executive power, and to use a state of emergency to score political points.
Tom, you wanted to have the last word on that.
Well, I just wanted to say quickly, Michael, about a month ago, I was talking to one of the president's senior advisors, and he said, look, we're going to lose this fight in the Senate, even though a veto will be sustained. He says, here's what we have to do. We have to convince the base that the president is fighting as hard as he can, as long as he can, and even if he loses, as long as the base is satisfied that he's fighting, that's all we need to do. I mean, it's a cynical political calculation, but it is probably the right political calculation, because at the moment there's nothing more important to President Trump than to keep his base solidified.
It's a standard position for an administration that never seems to stop campaigning.
Right.
We're going to take a quick break right now. We'll be back with more Issues in the News.
Issues in the News is coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. If you'd like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, go ahead and check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel. Tom Dufresne, contributing editor to National Journal, and Saeed Erekat, Washington Bureau Chief at Al-Quds Daily Newspaper. Our moderator is CBS radio contributor Michael Williams.
Welcome back. Let's move on to, I call it the U.S. economy by the numbers. President Trump's key issues were trade, the economy, and the numbers are not good. The latest numbers from the Commerce Department show a trade deficit of $891 billion, the largest in U.S. history. And on top of that, the federal budget ballooned in the last 4 months of the 2019 fiscal year, growing 77% over the same period a year earlier. Saeed, I'll start with you. I think it's a very simple explanation to why this happened, but if you want to offer up an explanation to how these happened and what they mean.
Well, I think very simple, especially with as far as the trade deficit with China is concerned. Our appetite in this country for imports and buying stuff and so on is just growing. There is no end to it. So we keep buying stuff and borrowing stuff and so on. So that's the simple way of understanding this. And it's... China is making all the stuff that we use in this country. On the flip side, we have, you know, the president, when he said that I'm going to bring back all the manufacturing jobs and so on to this country, that is not going to happen because the nature of the economy, the type of economy that we have today, has changed fundamentally. It is not, you know, we've grown dramatically and exponentially in terms of economics today. I think the jobs report today will be a good one for the president. It will show that it has grown by 180,000 in new jobs. So that's good news. That shows that the economy, despite, you know, the trade deficit, despite all these issues, is going to grow for some time to come. So, but all in all, the president who promised that he would, you know, reverse this trade deficit. They will win the thing with China is basically losing on
and
this
point.
And
that's the problem to me, is that it's the nature of the promise. I just want to point to former Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen. And she was asked on a radio show, a podcast or so, whether she thought that President Trump had a basic grasp of economic policy. And her simple answer was, no, I do not. And when you look at an economy where you have a billion-dollar tax cut that's unfunded, which creates a growing deficit, and to fulfill that deficit, to get the money that you need to operate the government, you have to borrow. And who are you borrowing from? Well, your number one debtor, which is China, which increases the trade. It really seems like simple mathematics. Tom, any good to you? Does this seem like an administration that really has a basic grasp on even macroeconomics? And if it doesn't, how can this persist? How can this work?
Well, I think the administration does have a grasp. Unfortunately, the chief executive does not have a grasp. And even his most loyal aides will get him in a room and they will just roll their eyes and they'll say, this is part of the problem that we confront. The president is not into policy. He's not really into issues. He's into instincts. He's an instinctive politician whose business instincts he believes have carried him to great new heights. But he's not a Renaissance man when it comes to issues. I mean, Obama could talk for hours on policy. Trump is very instinctive, and he does not spend a lot of time on policy.
No, he doesn't. And we have President Trump, we have Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin, we have Larry Kudlow, I believe, is the from the Council of Economic Advisors, and Wilbur Ross, who's the Commerce Secretary. I like to call them the law firm of Trump, Mnuchin, Kudlow, and Ross. And they are preaching that we can grow our way out of this deficit, that we can grow at 4%. 4% growth has not happened so far. I'm going to go back to you. So
I mean, the growth rate is stubbornly holding at about 2% and not the 4%. I think it will continue to be that way for some time. If not, we are headed towards the sort of an economic slowdown globally. And that is not going to help in any way the theory that we can grow ourselves out of this deficit.
Right. And Tom, what happened to the deficit hawk Republicans? That used to be a thing here in Washington, D.C., Republicans who felt that the deficit was the most important thing, reducing that. And what happened to that group of Republicans? Is there even one?
They've all gone underground. I mean, I can remember in the George W. Bush era, where George W. Bush didn't like his Treasury Secretary, Paul O'Neill, and he sent Vice President Cheney to send him the message that we need your resignation by the end of the day. And O'Neill was saying, you know, we have a terrible problem with deficits. And Cheney very famously said, Paul, Ronald Reagan proved the deficits don't matter. And while the deficit hawks still talk a good game about the need to reduce deficits, they pay no attention anymore, because that would once again be a situation where they could get crosswise with a president who is more popular in their districts and their states, for the most part, than they are.
It's an odd situation. History tells us that Bill Clinton, I believe, was the last U.S. president with a budget surplus. And I wonder in my heart of hearts if we'll ever have another one.
It doesn't look like
unlikely.
It. I mean, it doesn't look like it because, as I said, look, you know, there's every month it proves that our what we import versus what we export, is there's a deficit, not only with China, but with Europe, with other places and so on. This is likely to grow, and simply because Americans are wealthier. Americans have money, they're making money and so on, so they're spending more, they feel more comfortable in adding more to their credit card debts and so on. So we are likely actually to see this situation exacerbated rather than improve.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is facing a slew of corruption charges. There are three cases in question where Netanyahu allegedly offered lucrative government favors to counterparts who were already rich, quite frankly, and was offering them in exchange for rigged media coverage, which I believe he really didn't need, quite frankly. Said, I'll go to you on this one. What is the situation with Netanyahu? Is he in legal danger, and is he in political danger?
He is in legal danger, and I don't see him losing the elections. I mean, he tried to solidify his chances of winning another term by going, you know, really to the bottom of the barrel, so to speak, with the Jewish Power Party, which is a Kahanist party, which is, you know, in fact placed on the United States terrorist list, and so on. So he's alienated everybody. Even AIPAC said that this was a bad move, and they distanced themselves from it. Sure, it was in the same day that they invited him to speak at the conference. So he is in trouble, but if he wants to win another term, he would have to move to the center, which is really not much different than his opponents, you know. I mean, he's trying to fan the flames of fear, much like Trump did. There's a lot of similarities between him and Trump. He's saying that the left is doing this. Well, in fact, the left in Israel is really struggling to stay alive, you know, not let alone gain power. So I think that Netanyahu is in trouble. He will probably win the election. I think if we were to read a headline on April 10, we'd probably say that Netanyahu won another term. But within probably 6 months or 7 months, he's likely to be out of office because of these indictments.
Tom, the style of Benjamin Netanyahu reminds us of President Trump in the sense that he seems to thrive on the fight, the combat, the struggle, the conflict. Is this something where he really will have to maybe even resign his position before he takes office? That's happened in the case before with prime ministers.
Part of me says he wants the vindication of winning before reality sets in, and then he will have to do what he has to do. I think it's still uncertain whether, even if he does win this election, whether he can put together a new government. But you never know. But I agree with Saeed. I think I don't see him being prime minister of Israel a year from now, or probably even 6 months from now.
Do you think that he will go to jail?
I'm not enough of an expert on Israeli politics, but I think it's more likely than any of the other close calls he's had that this one will cause him to go to jail. That would really be breathtaking in Israel.
Very quickly, I mean, Ehud Olmert went to jail, so
there is a precedent.
And I think he probably would, because the Israeli judicial system in that particular area is very vigorous, and they will pursue him, and nothing's going to stop them. That's why he's trying to have people in the Knesset now that will see to it that he does not end up in jail.
We just got a couple of minutes left, and I just want to touch very, very quickly. I'll give you about 1 minute each to comment on the sentencing of Paul Manafort. He received in U.S. federal court charges amounting to roughly 4 years, just short of 4 years, which was off of a recommendation by the prosecutors of up to 24 years, I mentioned. So it was considered to be a very low sentence, given the recommendation. It's being criticized by some as relatively a slap on the wrist for white-collar crime. Just a minute each. I wanted to go to each of you and get your thoughts on this sentencing.
Yes, I think that he was sentenced to 47 months, I think, you know, just short of 4 years.
And given credit for time served as well.
And given credit for time served. I mean, we saw him yesterday in a jumpsuit rather than his fancy ostrich coat that he went to the court with, $15,000 coat. So in a way, I mean, it's a slap on the wrist, but it bodes very, very badly for the Trump administration. You know, if you look at the number of people that have been indicted or likely went to prison or likely to go to prison, it's getting larger and larger every day. Whether he gets pardoned or not, it's a big, big political issue for the president that he's going to make. I don't think he's going to make it anytime soon.
Tom?
Quickly, within a matter of days, Manafort is facing sentencing in another federal court on other alleged criminal misconduct, and so he could, for which he has also been found guilty in other matters, bank fraud and things like that. And so this is probably not the end of the roller coaster that Mr. Manafort is facing. He'll probably get some more years added on.
I think from between the two trials, one of the lingering phrases that will be remembered in Washington politics is the judge's statement that Paul Manafort has led an otherwise blameless life. that will be reviewed for years to come. That is all the time we have for today. My thanks to Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal, and Saeed Erekat, Washington Bureau Chief at Al-Quds Daily Newspaper. This program is produced by Patrice Martin. Our engineer is Justin Thwaites. And I'm Michael Williams. Thanks for listening.